now here for you. This is our seventh podcast, appropriately titled Hear Better, Duck Hunt Better. My name's Carl Kaczmarski, and I am here along with my wife, Dr. Becky Kaczmarski.
Hello.
And we are the owners of Kaczmarski Hearing Services. Joining us today is our special guest, two guests actually, Blair Bissell and Craig Curtis from Ducks Unlimited. Welcome. Thank you, Blair. Thank you, Craig, for joining us today.
No, thanks for having us. It's great to come out and talk about the ducks.
It is.
Appreciate you getting up early and doing this. Blair, take a moment and introduce us to Craig and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, myself, I've been a volunteer with Ducks Unlimited for 20-some plus years, and originally in the tool and die trade, so, you know, a little hearing issues with that as well, but and a lot of shooting. Craig has been a regional director for Ducks Unlimited for the last...
Well, I kind of like Blair, I've been around Ducks Unlimited. I started volunteering 24 years ago. I've been a regional director. I'm a staff person for DU. I work with the volunteers. And I've been, it's 14 years. Just October 1st was the start. Started 14 years of helping volunteers raise more dollars for the ducks.
So you've seen it all, but you're probably learning more every time you do things, right?
I would never say that I've seen it all, because
right.
there's always something to learn. But,
right.
But as Blair said, my background, I grew up on a farm with heavy equipment. I used to hunt a lot more before I worked for the ducks than I do now, and mm-hmm. time constraints. So my hearing is also taking a beating from equipment and from...
Recreational, as well as work, that kind of thing.
Exactly.
Yeah. So that's what we're here to talk about. There's a lot we would depend on our ears for to hunt and to play and to learn but ducks is such a bigger entity than I ever realized. It's really a very big organization that does so much more than I ever thought it did. When I met Blair, I learned a lot. So.
Yeah, that brings us to a point. So, Blair, how did you and Dr. Kaczmarski meet?
Well, Ducks Unlimited runs a booth down at the Ultimate Fishing Show here in Grand Rapids, and somehow she drew the short straw and got the booth next to us. So we met by shooting rubber bands at each other.
So be honest, we're good neighbors. We said, there goes the neighborhood.
With eye protection and hearing protection as well, right?
Yeah, I guess we could say.
Okay.
Very, very true. Well, we make ear molds at the show for hearing protection. And I think we set up a lot of your guys with custom earplugs at the show.
Yes, you did.
Mm-hmm. I own a pair.
That's excellent. Yep. The silicone earplugs are the best.
They're awesome.
We'll talk about that more soon.
So how did you guys get acquainted with Ducks Unlimited and what helped to pique your interest in this? Ducks Unlimited has a lot of tradition behind it, right?
Yeah. So actually my vice principal was a volunteer way back when I was still in high school. So there was a few friends of mine that were active with Ducks Unlimited. I'd love to hunt, but I never duck hunted. Went to a banquet, and next thing you know, I was on the chapter and volunteering. So with basically due to friends. And then the next thing you know, I own a dog and a truck and, you know, a few decoys, more than I can say in case my wife listens to this. Yeah, so I got very actively involved in the organization because it's a good organization to be involved with.
Who could say no to that, right?
Yeah, Craig, how did you get orientated?
Well, you got to go back to 1977 as a 12-year-old kid. A family friend introduced me to water fowling. Mm-hmm. And when you start watching the birds and learning the tricks of what it takes to be a waterfowler and an outdoors person, it's just a great opportunity. And one of my prior occupations was I was a car salesman in a small town in Pawpaw and in Michigan here. And my boss told me I needed to get involved in the community. And I went to another organization, and there was a bunch of older people there at the time. They're probably my age now. but I was a kid, and I didn't like it. So we went to a DU dinner, and I kind of found my home. I found people, you know, birds of a feather. So
that's interesting.
It kind of worked out.
That's what I found it. When I went to the DU dinner that I went to, or several of them, there's just a lot of good quality people in your organization, and it really shows that the length of time people are involved is another loyalty thing that just really says a lot about the organization. It really does.
Let's talk about Ducks Unlimited. I think a number of people do not really or fully understand what Ducks Unlimited is or how important the organization is in the conservation of waterfowl and our natural resources. What are some of the associations that Ducks Unlimited is involved in? Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, Ducks Unlimited was founded by some gentlemen in 1937 from New York during, it was right during the Dust Bowl. Mm-hmm. And they were seeing a declining number of waterfowl, and these guys were very rich people. And they said, we need to get our friends together and put something together. So that's when Ducks Unlimited became an organization in 1937. And it has grown into a organization that we have over 700,000 members across the U.S. We have here in Michigan, we have about 25,000 members. We have about 1,800 volunteers. And the volunteers like Blair and his committee and the other 100 and approximately the other 115 chapters in the state of Michigan, they're the lifeblood of DU. That's how we get things done.
But more specifically, what are some of the things that that DU does? And we know they're involved in the community, hunting, I suppose.
Some of the big things, we're raising money so we can give back to the habitat. And Ducks Unlimited will take the money that we raise and figure out where to best use that money. So they're using that money to save, create, and restore wetlands throughout all of the United States, Canada, and even some in Mexico, which help over, I think it's around 800 different species of wildlife, not just ducks.
That's one of the points I was driving towards. It sounds to me like conservation efforts go much further than just waterfowl.
Yeah, clean water is good for trout. It's good for anything, fish, ducks, birds.
So really, Ducks Unlimited is really a good friend to conservation and sportsmen across all mediums, right?
Well, I look at Ducks Unlimited, and what do? We put water on the surface of the earth. Mm-hmm. And restore it. And water is, I think it's our most valuable commodity. Mm-hmm. If you don't have water, we don't have anything. And pure water is extremely important. So that as time has gone on, that's what's changed my philosophy a little bit about how and what we do, this water, and it's gonna become bigger and bigger issue. So that's what's great about DU. We're very efficient with our funds. So if you gave us a dollar and we turn that dollar back around, we send that to Memphis, and as Blair said, we do work across North America. This past year, we were 83 cents for every dollar goes back into the ground. Extremely
wow.
Efficient. Our goal is to be between 80 and 86% efficient every year.
So the money you raise and the money that comes into the organization really does go out where it's supposed to be gone.
Exactly.
Put into use.
That is amazing. Since the 30s, what if you guys weren't around since the 30s? We would have had a lot of loss.
Well, across North America, we've conserved over 14 million acres.
That's crazy.
And I probably should have thought about what 14 million acres looks like, but, it's a lot of territory.
Wow, something to be proud of. That's major.
So for the people that don't really know and maybe often make the mistake or an association directly with Ducks Unlimited, like an NRA, other than big parties and getting together at events like this and raising money, what's it like? And what's it like to really go out on a duck hunt? And take us through a little bit of the setup for that. So you guys obviously are not all Ducks Unlimited are in it for just hunting, right? I mean,
we're a conservation organization first and foremost.
People immediately associate Ducks Unlimited with going out there blasting ducks in the marshlands, but it's not that at all.
No, Ducks Unlimited, we're a conservation organization, but we are, our main supporters are hunters.
Okay.
And if you look across the country, who helps the environment probably the most, it is hunters.
But these are hunters that are helping to control populations, hunters that are watching for diseases, people that are really out there monitoring the land so that the treatment of animals and the preservation of the...
I think it's that, but I think it's also, I think it's somebody's hobby. It's, for me, it's always good to get out there, and it helps regenerate my battery a little bit. you know, with Michigan's deer season on right now, my daughters have been deer hunting with me, and they're 17 and 15, and, you know, they said, boy, Dad, this is pretty cool, getting up in the morning and seeing, you know, the wildlife. So that's the other part of it, is
spending that time together.
Yeah, it's camaraderie.
That's a story a lot of hunters tell, is it's just give you a way to step away from things and get back to nature.
Well, duck hunting's one thing, too, where you don't have to be quiet all the time. So if you're sitting in a blind with a bunch of buddies, you're sitting there making up stuff and picking on each other. And
well, that's, you know, true. I never thought about that. For deer hunting, you got to be dead quiet.
But yeah, you can't move.
Right, right.
And that, like Blair said, that's the fun part about duck hunting. You get to get out there and you can communicate, and you can pick on each other a little bit about missing a shot. Uh-huh. Or you just watch a sunrise. I was in Texas back in 1998, and I was a volunteer for DU then, and we were snow goose hunting, and I saw probably the most spectacular sunrise I'd ever seen coming up across the rice prairies. It was purples and pinks, mm-hmm, and blues, and
memories etched forever.
It is.
Yeah. Wow. So is there I may be jumping out of order here, some of my questions, but is there a limit on ducks, or how does somebody say, one day I'm going to wake up and I'm going to go duck hunting? Talk about the season a little bit.
The season changes every year. There's a committee that decides what the season is and the bag limits is, and it's not just the government doing it. It's actually the hunters that are qualified. They're elected to do that position. Mm-hmm. And so the seasons and the limits vary every year based on how the winter went and how the breeding went for that year.
So again, the monitoring of the...
And it depends on what fly zone you're in. You have Mississippi Flyway, which we're in. So just, you know, the most common duck is a mallard that everybody kind of knows, you know, right, the green head and red feet. And so the mallards, you can... I haven't even shot one this year, so I believe...
Two drakes went in.
Yeah.
I think...
No.
It's three this
year. No more than two hens... No more than four mallards. So you could have three drakes.
You said something that's pretty interesting to me, not being an avid duck hunter, but you talk about the fly zones and then the types of breeds that exist in Michigan. You mentioned the mallard. I had read from some notes here that we have the mallard, the divers, black duck, teal, other dabblers, pintail. Tell us a little bit about the species of deer. I know I may be testing you here, but what do we see come through Michigan, or what do you come encounter?
What time of year are you talking about?
That's something we need to learn.
See, I'm used to throwing crackers in the pond here, and I really haven't.
Well, actually, the crackers are not good for them.
Okay.
Because it's a processed food. It's kind of like people. The animals aren't designed to eat the processed food. So bread and crackers, that isn't necessarily good for the wild animals.
And that's the first thing everybody wants to do, is share a piece of their sandwich when they see them, or throw a chunk of bread.
You know, so, you know, a lot of people give them whole corn and, or soybeans. It's kind of like us, the more whole foods that they eat,
right,
you know, it's a lot better for them. But going back to the ducks, in Michigan, your primary species that breed and reproduce here are... For divers, you get some ringnecks that'll nest here in northern Michigan, but you'll get teal, mallards.
Wood ducks are very popular here.
So describe those as best you can, because, I think of ducks and I see one duck, probably the mallard, right?
Yeah.
They're the most populous?
Yeah.
Okay, so beyond that, then how would we recognize some of these? We're people that are walking.
Wood ducks, they're all different. Wood ducks, very colorful, and a lot of hunters, that's a pretty good prize for them. You know, like me, I didn't hunt a lot of big water. I'm hunting all these beaver ponds, and so I shot more wood ducks than anything.
So they got kind of a red eye.
Interesting.
Hmm.
So this is why sportsmen actually go out and get fitted with gear, and they're outfitted, and they're going into areas. Most of us non-hunters think that you guys are out hunting the same ducks that hang around our boats and our house docks and things.
Well, some of them are.
But there are other species that are...
Right now we have ducks, coming from Canada. This is the prime time, a little past maybe even a week. But so you have the golden eyes and a barrel's golden eye, which is kind of rare. you know, they don't breed here in Michigan, but they're up there.
They're from the boreal forest area of Canada.
So that's like the time of year with the species you're hunting is part of the game then, so to speak.
Well, I'll never forget the poster you gave my boys at one of the shows. It has probably 60, 70 ducks on it.
Yeah.
So to identify them. It's a great poster.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll have more at the show this year.
Good, okay.
Well, you also have geese, too. So you have, you know, the Canada goose is the primary goose that you see here. But occasionally in our part of the, you know, southwest Michigan, we'll have snow geese that pass through. We'll have once in a great while, you get what they call speckle belly.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really, it's a white-fronted goose is what I believe its technical name is.
So each species has their own little season, or when is duck hunting season?
No, it, you know, it usually goes for 45 days, and the start varies. You know, up north, it'll start this year 2 weeks before it did down here in the lower, and then the middle zone started the next week. So there's technically three openers, which a lot of hunters like, because they can, they'll hit each zone.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's there's a lot of heritage there doing the three openers, but it does vary every year. And so this year it ends like the second weekend of December, I think.
Second weekend, I believe it's second weekend. And then we have there's a split. So we have 2 days later in December. And that's for the lower zone. That's the only zone I hunt is the lower zone. But but like the resident geese, we have a resident goose population here that...
Well, you keep bringing up that dirty word for a lot of people, and I was going to ask you about that. Geese.
Yeah.
Well,
what is the conservation outlook, or how does the organization or people that are watching waterfowl approach the geese issue? Because obviously, they're invasive in a lot of the area. We're probably invading on their territory first, but
well, we create a habitat for the Canada goose.
Okay, yeah.
And you're going to go, okay, well, how do we create a habitat for geese? We have a lot of golf courses.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of lake properties. And a goose's primary food in the spring, summer, early fall is short grass.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we get
it's like a big salad bar for them.
It is. It's a huge salad bar for the geese. So, you know, and there's water on the golf course, so there's opportunity for them to have water and grass. And
it's really nice of us, isn't
it? Yeah, it really is. So we're kind of our worst known enemy in that way.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the people that I have talked with that think of geese as a nuisance, are we actually seeing a population boom in the geese, or are we seeing the fact that our sprawl is actually encroaching more on their territory?
I think I don't track the numbers very well.
We just create a better habitat. So there's more that maybe would travel somewhere else, but we've created the habitat so they don't have to travel, so they stay here.
It's a magnet.
And we want to keep the water open so we can play golf longer in the fall. So there's aeration in the water, so the lakes may stay open longer. So they stay here, but the resident, so that's what the winter goose hunt is. There's a resident population hunt because the geese from up north, they migrate right on through. But our resident geese, a lot of them stay here year round. And that late hunt is designed to help maintain or stabilize that population.
Hmm. In recent years, I think Becky and I have both seen an increase in we've seen increases in owl activity. Personally, we've seen owls, eagles in Michigan. You've seen more than you have in the last 20 years, I think, for sure. Even the loon population seems to be stronger now. Do you have any
water quality?
Is that what you attribute that to?
Water quality and different practices of what we do with herbicides, pesticides,
because it's really those unique birds. Not the ones we see every day. I think they capture people's attention. Of course, you know, in the right setting, they're all majestic in their own way. But it's remarkable to see those specific species sort of come back into our field of vision.
Well, I think if you're an avid birder, what you'll find is the waterfowl probably, and especially ducks, they have the best color of all the birds.
Mm-hmm.
Blue jays are very pretty in the winter. They get, the vibrant blue.
Mm-hmm.
But in the springtime, if you go out to a marsh and see these paired up ducks coming back north, holy cow, the colors on these birds are phenomenal.
It's an art.
It is.
Like that sunset you're talking about,
right?
Yeah,
it really is.
And you
think about birders or just people in general, spring's a great time to go out We do a marsh walk. We've been doing it over at St. John's at the Maple River State Game Area for the last couple springs. And, you know, you can come out on a Saturday morning and walk around the marsh, and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife and our regional biologists, they have some telescopes set up. And you can go out there and take a look at these birds, and it's phenomenal.
We have to do that. That's a big area, isn't it?
Yeah, it's huge.
Yeah, that's cool.
So we've talked about what dates constitute hunting season, but I wanted to recap that. Can you restate those so people...
Well, the dates are going to vary every year, so you'll have to...
So basically, if I'm looking to get into...
First of October.
First of October, okay.
To the first of December.
Okay.
Yep. Roughly. Roughly, yeah.
Yeah, and Craig, you shared a favorite story, but... you know, Blair, can you share what memories come to mind, or how about a funny story? You know, something that's happened in the bush.
Something that's happened in the bush that's somewhat
and one that you can tell and share
or
with
unique.
Us today, not offend anybody. Okay.
No laws are broken.
Right, right.
Yeah.
But somebody thought there was, so that was the. We were hunting up north, up by Clare area, to a public access place of DNR land, and. I had talked to one of my DU buddies to go with me, you know, and we went up and just to hunt the evening hunt and then come right back. And we neither one of us had been here before, so we put the boat in, and it's real mucky, and it was hard to stay in this little teeny channel to get out into the better water to where you would set up. And of course, the best place to set up is furthest from the boat launch, you know, just like any hunting spot. You go to the end of the road and then you keep going. So we hunt, and a practice that I always made, you know, with when it's, you can only, legal shooting hours is regulated. So when the legal shooting hours are done, you unload your gun and you put it in a case. You don't want to be tempted, you know?
Right.
So we had done that, and we'd never shot a bird that whole night. And we saw a few flying super high. And as we were starting to pick up decoys, the birds were landing and swimming right next to the boat, you know?
Right there.
So we're yelling bang at them, and they just look at you. So we pick up and we start heading in. And we sat there for a while and watched the ducks come in. That was kind of fun. And as we're heading in, we got out of the channel a few times, and I had to climb out of the boat and push the boat back into the channel. So this, what should take 10, 15 minutes to get back to the boat launch, took us over an hour. And as we were pulling up, I was exhausted from climbing in and out of the boat and pushing the boat back and forth.
Right.
And I was dragging the boat up to shore and kind of half out of my breath. And I had said, as I got out of the boat, I says, well, I'll clean all the ducks. Because we didn't get any. You know, you offer to clean all the fish, or you do all the work when there's no work to be done. So I offered to clean all the ducks. And I climbed out of the boat, and I was pulling up on shore. And next thing I know, there's a person standing right next to me. And all I saw was the pistol in a holster, and it was a lady DNR officer.
Huh.
And she scared the crap out of both of us. And the other guy had actually fell out of the boat because we were both scared. So she said she wanted to see our ducks.
Right.
Well, I had forgot. I had just said I'd clean them all. And I says, well, we don't have any. And she says, well, that's funny. You just offered to clean them all.
Uh-huh.
Oh, no.
So she spent the next hour going through the boat and the truck and the trailer looking for something that we'd done wrong.
I was kidding.
She didn't find anything wrong. So it was a good, funny story.
It is. Because she's thinking she's nailed you guys and there's nothing there. And you followed the rules. Good for you. Good for you. See?
I thought you were going that there was ducks laying in the boat.
No,
you were
going
to do something.
There was nothing wrong.
That's great. That is really cool.
So you mentioned getting outdoors with your kids and you know, getting a younger generation out there to appreciate nature when we can't even get these kids to stop playing when they're in the car on these devices. Are you seeing younger generations develop any kind of interest, or is it when the fathers... I think advice for all of us who have children's ages.
There seems to be like a generation gap now where there's kids that really want to do it, but they can't find a mentor to take them.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So we are getting some young kids involved, not enough, in volunteering, which is kind of surprising. And when I say young, the 25 to 30-year-old, right. And most of those, you know, they're busy having raising early families. But we're getting some of those involved right now, which is kind of exciting for the future because some of us are getting too old to do this all the time.
Well, in Michigan, we're really lucky in Michigan. We have a lot of state game areas that offer opportunities for people to get out and use those. I think the private area, the private property is a little different story. It's, you know, it's a little harder today. People are more worried about letting people on their property hunting and everything. So that dynamic's a little bit different. But the shooting sports, you know, a lot of these schools have sporting clays and trap teams now, and you know, I think so the shooting sports are coming back, and which is a good thing. There's nothing wrong with that sport. It's a, you know, it's a great time, great way to spend time with family, especially you know, if you're Blair and my age, it gives you an opportunity to go share something that you grew up with and
pass it along.
Exactly.
Very important, because it's the only exposure that these younger generations are going to get, is we bring them involved and make them involved,
and they're learning the right way to do it too.
And you know the interactive stuff, okay, fine, you know, in the digital world that we live in, but you really do get to see an expression on people's faces, and when they're out there and they're smelling and all their senses are working together, you know, you take for granted what casting a fishing pole or trekking through some swamp, or you know, the real life adventure is quite different than living it online.
Well, you know, an aspect that isn't talked about a lot though is in our health conscious environment, when you're talking about meat and produce that have hormones or antibiotics or exposed to pesticides, herbicides, you know, venison, waterfowl, pheasants, wild pheasants, they're not exposed to a lot of hormones, antibiotics.
Yeah.
The health benefits of that food is pretty high.
The fact that you say food, and what is it? Is there a difference in flavor between the different species?
So
eating seagulls versus
wouldn't know about seagulls.
Yeah, never eaten a seagull. But you know, there's some ducks that you purposely won't shoot at because you don't want to eat them.
Yeah.
Merganser is a real good one that they're pretty to look at, but you really don't want to shoot one. And coots is we call them water chickens because there's so many of them out there, but
I don't think
a dog would
eat it. What's the best duck on the dinner table?
Mallard's pretty good.
Yeah. Okay, canvasbacks.
Okay.
Really? I've never shot a canvasback. But everybody says canvasback, they're the king of ducks.
Huh.
And during the market hunting era, canvasback was one of the very best. And of course, they're vegetarians and they're eating, I can't think of what it's called now, but it's a... aquatic celery. Mm-hmm. So they used to eat a lot of that.
So inevitably that gives them their flavor.
Yes.
Texas, they get to hunt sandhill cranes down there, and they're called the ribeye of the sky.
Wow.
I guess those are really good, but
yeah,
I've never had one either.
So when if you are a duck hunter or you want a duck hunt, and let's say you harvest a bufflehead or golden eye, when you cut that bird open and the fat is kind of pink, it's probably going to have a little bit of a fishy taste because of what the diver duck's been eating.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the mallards, the pintails, the dabbling ducks are going to have more of a yellow fat, and that fat adds more flavor.
Mm.
And I mean, most people have heard of duck confit, which is the duck fat. And duck fat's really good.
Delicacy, huh?
The whole duck is really good at. And, you know, when people used to cook things, I know my mother, she used to cook everything until it was very well done. And that kind of ruins the flavor in the meat.
Mm-hmm.
So my duck and my goose that I prepare, it's probably closer to rare than it is to medium. And
you get that flavor. What is your favorite way of cooking these guys?
Oh, my goodness. There's so many of them.
Just have
to beer can duck.
Well, so I'll take a mallard breast and I butterfly it open, and I'll stuff mushrooms, jalapenos, onion, wrap them back up, and I generally skin mine, so I'll wrap a piece of bacon around there to give it a little bit of grease and
fat.
Yeah, it doesn't dry out.
It doesn't dry out. And here again, I cook them to medium rare, rare.
Just right.
And we're just a couple days before Thanksgiving. Is there a duck on either one of your tables this year?
Nope.
I have not harvested a duck this year.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Still time.
Yeah, right. The weather looks perfect. Yeah.
For that Christmas goose they always talk about.
So let's not forget somebody very important. But tell us a little bit about man's best friend. What about hunting dogs? And have either of you owned dogs that are currently owned dogs?
Yeah, no. I put mine down at 15 and a half years old.
Oh,
and,
okay.
You know, family members.
Yeah. You know, I grew up with my kids, so it was a great thing.
What kind of dogs constitute good duck dogs? And I mean, there's a lot of them out there, but from what you guys see in there, what I'm sure, you know, the dogs are a lot like cell phones. Whatever you have the best phone, you've got the best dogs.
There must be a lot some people love iPhones and some Androids, and same thing with dogs. You know, some it's what they prefer, and you know, Labradors, Golden Retrievers, and
Chesapeake Bay Retrievers
are the duck dogs, and there's Labradoodles. I guess some people use.
Nova Scotia tolling dogs.
Right.
That's one that's kind of not heard of.
I have to look that up.
Yeah, it's a very cool little dog that not big. It might be 40 pounds.
Does the job, huh?
Yeah, it does the job. I've never hunted.
Labradors love to please their owners, you know, right. And you get the right dog that wants to please their owner and they're trainable by somebody that knows how to train them.
Is that what your dog was? Did you have a Labrador? Or?
I had just a lab.
A yellow lab. And obviously, what was his name?
Her name was Bailey.
Bailey.
I met Bailey.
Bailey hunted with you?
Yeah. If somebody else had a dog, I didn't take her, which is not fair to my dog. But she was pretty good, but not great. But it was because I trained her. Nobody else did.
Well, it takes a lot of owner interaction and love and nurturing. And it's a way of life for the dog that the dog wants to please you.
Yeah, and they have to have trust in their owner, too. And, you know,
it truly is an art.
A relationship.
It's an art how you train these dogs. So my dog, I had Chesapeake Bay Retriever, and like Blair was saying, I had to put him down this past summer. He had diabetes. He went completely blind and was having some other issues, and then it was time to put him down. But he had a couple titles, and he was talking about funny stories. And this comes back to how smart the dogs are sometimes. I was out hunting, and I had these mallards come in, and I shot one and I saw it drop, and I shot at the second one and I didn't see it drop, and I switched to the third bird and I shot that one and dropped it. And a term for your dog to go get the bird is back, and you send him back. Well, he went out and got the first bird, and I sent him on the third bird that I saw go down, and he started going, he stopped and turned around and looked at me.
Dad.
And I go, come on, what are you doing? And I blew my whistle again and told him to go back. He stopped again and looked at me. And in a Chesapeake, you got to understand it, the Labradors want to be your buddy. The Chesapeakes want to come over and kick you when you're not thinking right. That's their mentality.
They're like, come on, Dad. Yeah.
So he ran his own direction. I go, oh, you're going to get it when you get back. And he came back with a bird, and I go, oh, my goodness.
You missed one.
You saw that one. I didn't see that one. And he went and got the third one, and, of course, he came back, his tail's wagging.
He's all excited to go, what about number two? Why are you sending me to three?
Yeah. Right? But it comes back to where I was going with that, with the training, is there's hunter-retriever clubs. Mm-hmm. They're called HRCs. And here, again, there are people getting together, and they're training dogs. Not all those dogs are they're hunting dogs, but they're not all used for hunting. And that's another great activity that gets you outdoors and gets you around other, you know, like-minded people. But, yeah, the dogs are fun.
I would think that makes the outing even better, even with the kids, to see the dogs that responsive. And
I would rather go work my dog than to hunt.
Yeah.
I'd rather take the dog and let him do his thing.
It's such a relationship there. It really is. They're connected to your
animals.
There's
such an art. There's these dogs, they learn by whistle. By hand signals.
It's crazy.
Because they may be so far away that all they can see is your hand or hear the whistle. And they're paying attention to that.
They're on it. That's their job. Yeah. I have a couple of lazy retrievers at home. They don't even know.
Well, I've got a lab at home that, he's a couch, not a couch potato. But
we have a fellow volunteer that has a dog, and he doesn't even take his gun if he's going with other guys. He just wants to watch his dog work.
Right.
Wow. And of course, the show has the, they do a kickoff with a dog jumping competition and some other retrieval competitions.
Mm-hmm. And my dog was a pretty good jumper, too. She was way too big to be competitive, but that was something she loved to do.
You know, and we've had, like Becky said, labs and retrievers as well, and you find that it's either in their DNA or it's not, because sometimes we have a waiter, a guy that just loves to walk around and chase fish all day, chest high, and we've had a lab that would go out 5 miles for a stick and have his companion steal it 10 feet from shore.
Right.
100 times in a row, They never fail to impress.
But it is in their blood, though. One retriever just will hunt frogs all day long. Just love it. Just so busy all day.
Just watching him pushing him around with his nose. Yep. So we, Kaczmarski Hearing Services, we're, why are we doing all these strange podcasts? A few of my friends have said, but it really does come back into lifestyle and hearing and conservation. And of course, we'd love to save many more people from having to need or use hearing aids than we would rather to sell them. But it's all part of that process, awareness. And so maybe you can, Becky, chime in and talk a little bit about protection that you've experienced with these hunters and some of the things that have been well received at the shows.
Well, I think you guys are so into conservation, it goes along with the wetlands as well as conserving your hearing and your ears and that kind of thing. And the older you get, the more aware you are of these things. It's such a gradual process. When you're young, everything's fine. It's gradual. I'm going to be okay. But then we start to feel those things with our careers and our other things we do, chainsawing and snowmobiling. Everything's loud in this world and concerts. But I think that that's what I noticed about the ducks. They're one of the more concerned populations of members about their hearing, and I think that's something that's to be said for your organization to encourage those things. But like we at the Ultimate Sports Show downtown, we offer the custom silicone earplugs that we make right downtown at the show. We have other lab created ear molds that we can do for communication for people who do work in noise in a factory who need to still communicate with people. I think one of the nicest things about the custom earplugs is because when you're skeet shooting, the muffs aren't in the way. When you in your shoulders and in your right ear or your left ear, depending which eye you're using, but it's also best to double up on your ear protection. Sometimes wearing the custom plugs as well as the earmuffs. So it's really important to do it. You just got to have it as part of the process, as part of the, like putting your seatbelt on.
Exactly.
Yeah, we used to wear seatbelts in the 70s. Now I don't even ever think twice about it putting that seatbelt
on. One thing I've noticed, I think guys as they approach their, speaking for guys, not for women, but you approach, you know, middle age and you say to yourself, well, I've done it this way for so long, I guess I'll just keep doing it the way I'm doing. But in reality, and I think Becky will speak more on this, is that, you know, we want to preserve, just because we were stupid for so many years doesn't mean we have to stay stupid or ignorant towards our hearing. You know, sure. We still have plenty of years left and we want to preserve what we have, and especially being out in the wild and, you know, when you're in a silent environment, you want to hear all those sounds. And because we lost a few of them up to this point doesn't mean we want to continue to do damage yet.
Well, I think it's education too. Mm-hmm. You go back to 60s, 70s, yep. 80s.
Didn't matter back then.
No, nobody right. said anything about it. And, mm-hmm. and I know I'm very conscious of it with my girls to mm-hmm. make sure that when we're at the range shooting, if they're helping me with yard, mm-hmm. if we're at my folks' farm, I'm making sure that they're wearing hearing protection. And even, you know, an old dog can learn new tricks. They really can. Mm-hmm. I wear my hearing protection. The only time I do not wear it is like for deer hunting. I don't wear it. I should be wearing it for duck hunting, but we're generally not in that close proximity right. where I'm getting what do they call it? Getting your bell rung, I guess.
Yeah. That's about rung. What it is too. But when you're skeet shooting, it's over and over, and that's the frequency and the duration that make a difference.
I mean, okay, so you know, you talk about like you don't wear it when you're deer hunting, but can one shot do damage to your ear permanently?
It can, but it's also duration and frequency as well. So, yeah, even one shot can do it. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. But
so, really, I mean, one shot could be damaging for life.
It could be, yeah. Okay. Yep, not going to deny it, no. Okay.
So, I think that's a good spot to probably bring this together. And I was wondering if you could tell us, so if somebody, tell us what chapter you're from again and how somebody could contact you or somebody could find out more information about becoming involved in your chapter.
Well, there's many chapters throughout Michigan, 115 to 130 chapters. It varies every year.
Wow.
You know, 180 events. Most of the chapters do have a Facebook page now, so they could look locally for their Facebook or for their Ducks Unlimited chapter there. I'm with South Kent Ducks Unlimited, and I'm actually active with many different chapters.
But so if you just Google
South Kent Ducks Unlimited on Facebook, that would pop up. Greater Grand Rapids has one as well.
Okay.
Hastings has one.
Lowell
has one too. I forgot about Lowell.
Is there a welcome public event or anything coming up where
Yeah, at the Hunt and Time Expo, usually there's a DU booth. Lowell runs that booth, and then the Ultimate Sports Show, South Kent, who actually partners up with who anybody would like to volunteer that's on a chapter already, to volunteer, and they come down and work the event, and then they get to see it for free.
Now, Hunting Expo, that takes place when?
The Ultimate Sports Show is in 20, March.
The Ultimate's in March. The Hunting Expo is in January. It's the 25th and 6th, I think, at the Deltaplex.
Deltaplex, okay.
Well, you guys run raffles and fundraisers that way for guns and...
At some of the shows, South Kent does. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the other chapters do. Mm-hmm. They'll have... Sometimes they're just giving out information and stickers to the kids and posters.
Right, posters.
Just getting their name out, you know.
But we're always looking for volunteers. I mean,
yeah,
we'll take any... Anybody that wants to add something beneficial to our organization, we want them there to be volunteers. It's, you know, that's our lifeblood. Our volunteers are lifebloods. And you can go to ducks.org and go through the web. There's a spot there that says volunteering. You can plug your name in, and that'll come back out regardless from where you're at. We can use volunteers across the country.
How many members are in your chapter?
My chapter, I think we're up to about 12 now, which we need all of those 12, plus I borrow some from other chapters when we have our banquet. Greater Grand, you know, they had a 275 people guests show up to the event at Thousand Oaks Country Club there, and we had, they have a 25 to 30 member volunteer base, but we still had to go out and find other volunteers to help us from other chapters for that event. It takes a lot to put on an event. And when it comes to volunteers, the people that want to volunteer, that's why I don't have enough time, you know. And you don't have to book yourself to 10 hours a week or 10 hours a month. It's, as volunteers, we take whatever we can get and whatever you can beneficially give me. If you wanted to volunteer and the only thing you want to do is bring two people to an event that's never come before, that's a great volunteer.
Sure, sure.
Every bit.
So for those people listening that just simply want to get out there and experience the outdoors a little bit, don't even necessarily want to hunt, still great to get connected to the organization and partner with some folks.
They all drink water.
That's right. That's all about conservation and that kind of thing. And that's probably one of your biggest pulls. And then people who don't hunt, they don't need to hunt. It's just part of the conservation.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's what I think. I mean, the clean water and, you know, if you want to preserve this environment for the future generations, we're a great place to come help do that.
It really, really is. Well, that's a great place to end. So I want to thank you guys so much for taking the time out of your schedules to come with us this gloomy fall morning. It's getting sunny out there, I think.
Perfect hunt weather.
It's perfect.
It's a great day.
You can see the blacktop. We're fine.
Yeah, that's right. Well, okay. So it would mean the world to us if you'd share this podcast with your friends and family, maybe on your Ducks Facebook pages, that kind of thing. Our goal is to help you hear better where you live and get the most out of the life you live. So I really, really thank you for coming, and I thank everybody for listening to our very, very interesting Ducks Unlimited Hear Better podcast, number 7. Well,
thank you
guys.
Thanks for having us.
Excellent.